Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
I've been in this town so long that back in the city I've been taken for a lost and gone, and I've known for a long, long time. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and villains. Rain of the bullets that eventually brought her down. But she's still dancing in the night, unafraid of what a doodle would do in a town full of heroes and
Ryujin, heroes rise and fall, but there are always stories that slip through the cracks, such as, how do you pronounce Ryujin? But the one person who can actually identify that and certainly tell us about life and the universe between conversations is the awesome Canadian writer, it's Mark Watson. And Mark's with us now. How are you, Mark?
I am doing wonderful, Alex. Thank you very much for that introduction.
Oh, very good. And I have to say, I'm very impressed with the cowboy-esque hats that you're wearing at present, clearly ready for the Calgary Stampede, and the whole sort of notions of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. It's wonderful.
I learned a long time ago that a cowboy hat, even if you're not from a cowboy family, which I'm not really, is an incredibly practical piece of clothing. So,
and obviously, opting for that one as opposed to the classic 10-gallon hat modeled by Hoss Cartwright in Bonanza.
It does not fit on my Zoom camera.
Always a way forward. I've got to say, Mark, I mean, it's obviously more about millinery, this conversation, but in terms of the hat, a black hat as opposed to a white hat, is that a significant sort of line that we're taking here?
I can leave that up to interpretation.
Yeah, we'll leave that to one side. It's very, very good. let's move on to Ryujin. And first of all, is it Ryujin? Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Pretty close. It's a little bit softer R. It's Ryujin, but Ryujin also works. If no matter what, I think we're all just going to be butchering a Japanese word that I have used. So we're going to do the best we can, and I hope they're good with it.
I mean, you know, is it Ryan Reynolds? Is it Ruin Reynolds? I don't know. It's very difficult, but you know, Ryujin. We'll go with that. Talk us through this, because this sounds absolutely amazing. I mean, not just what, 9 stories from a world that is historic, modern, terrifyingly futuristic. Is this playing to that notion that, well, time itself is just an illusion? All things occur simultaneously, as cosmologists would say?
No, it's far more linear than that in this case. What this is a collection of short stories that take place in a world that I've already written in my previous science fantasy duology called Catching Hell. And I wanted to take some of those other tiny little stories on the periphery, ones that people don't necessarily focus on, and characters that aren't big sweeping epic characters, just regular people like you and me, and how they deal with this fantastic world that they live in. But I wanted to also do it in a unique way, so I've done it chronologically. So there's 9 stories, and each one of them is laid out chronologically over a course of thousands of years in this world.
I mean, that really is at the heart of this whole essence. I mean, science fiction is renowned for its world-building capabilities. I mean, do you ever get a sense of the divine as the author, as the creator of the works that you're actually doing, when you're actually saying, goodness, this could really impact on this person? Ha 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 ha, maniacal laugh.
Absolutely. There has to be a little bit of that, I think, in every author of genre fiction. There has to be a little bit of, as you say, a touch of the divine. There also has to be a little bit of a slight masochistic streak to these characters that we have created, right? Like, they're a part of me, but they're also a part of themselves. I feel what they feel, and I have written how they are as people. So absolutely, there is just a little touch of that, just a touch of malice, if you will.
Yeah, well, that's right. When you mention a touch of the divine, of course, with maybe just a teeny hint of malice. No, there's no malice in Jessica Burtis, clearly. Jessica is with us now from North Carolina. Now, I haven't actually quite got my immediate sort of to-hand connection between how far North Carolina is from Calgary, Alberta, but I'm suspecting it's a few hundred miles, maybe even a few thousand. I don't know.
I would have to do the math on this. I suspect that she'd actually be closer to you than she is to me.
Yeah,
well, I'd have to double check that.
Yeah, North America, it's bigger than you think it is. That's the important thing, you know? Canada,
exactly.
North America, it's great. Jessica, welcome to our author interview segment, obviously, of the Midweek Drive. Good to see you as ever. I noticed you've removed the masks for this one today, so you're back in a kind of safe area, presumably.
Yes, I am. I'm in my dorm. I'm safe now from the wrestlers.
I mean, this is it, Mark. We're living in such a kind of world. I mean, when you were writing between conversations, or indeed when you're creating the duology and so on, if somebody had actually rolled out this notion of the pandemic and so on, would you have said, no, it's too far-fetched, really?
I don't think I would have. I think I've read enough fiction in my life to know what is kind of believable and what's not. So I hear that a lot. Like, well, you couldn't write a story like this. This is something straight out of Hollywood. I'm like, well, is it really, though? Like, it's not like it just suddenly sprang up upon us. It unfurled over a period of months, and we could kind of watch it happen. Now, did I ever think that it would last this long and have the impact that it has in the world? No, probably not. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm absolutely shocked at it, because as a creator of fictitious worlds, I have a higher level of believability for these kinds of things, I would think.
Well, interesting. A similar response was provided by one of our director colleagues, Ilana Rain, on a recent Zoom, where she said, yeah, of course, you know, Hollywood's used to this. It's old hat, etc. Jessica, I'm not sure whether you've had a chance to read any of Between the Conversations. I mean, literally, we covered a range of other bits and pieces through that. But questions from yourself as a humanities major, an English scholar, etc., for a creative writer for Mark.
So I think you kind of, the press release kind of seemed like it was a bit of magical realism found in your book. And fiction is my favorite genre. I think fantasy kind of is my favorite. And so I was wondering how you kind of think that adds to reality. Like, what do you think reading does for people when they're reading fiction particularly?
I think it can absolutely open up so many doors in your own mind. I had a drama teacher back in high school. I was a drama student, and he kind of touched on it very, very similar to how I feel about fiction. And that is, once you start going down this road, and once you do this, now he was referring to acting and he was referring to getting in front of people, but it's all creativity. So, and I've always kind of taken it to heart. He said, once you've done this, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You are now going to have an expanded mind. You're going to see things in the way that a lot of people that you're going to meet in your life are not going to see them. You are going to open up your mind to all these different possibilities you never considered before, just because you are allowing yourself to be this creative. And that has held with me for so long. And I really think that that applies to reading and writing in fiction as well. If you sit there and you willingly consume all of these fantastical stories, or even just more grounded things, just standard modern fiction and prose, you absolutely see the world a lot differently than somebody who doesn't take the time to do that, or perhaps they only consume their fiction through television or movies or that kind of thing. There is a slow, gradual, blooming process to when you're turning a page versus when you're just sitting watching a movie. And yeah, you can sit there and you can get really into it for 2 hours, but at the end of the day, it might not have that same kind of effect on you because it is such a fast process. Reading, it takes some time, and it allows you to open up that part of your mind that much slower and recognize it that much more.
I mean, that really is part of the pleasure, of course, of appreciating a good book and often going back to reread books, like, for instance, Death Dresses Poorly. You know, what's not to love the more you actually read that particular aspect about Ethan, a directionless 20-something who's finally cast off the heartbreaking responsibilities of his broken boyhood home and so on. But, I mean, actually, it is a case of you need to take time to savour. When you're writing that, do you have sort of spurts of creativity, or are there moments where you actually turn around and say, I'm just going to let this mellow for a while and simmer, really?
Oh, it's absolutely a little bit of both. I'm glad you touched on Death Dresses Poorly, because when I'm talking about that, I always feel bad about it in a certain way, because for my original duology, my Catching Hell duology, it was, by the time I was done writing it, it was 250,000 words. And it was years of my life between the writing and the editing and on and on and on. So I like to say that sitting down writing it to the time where I was finally able to take it and put it someplace out in the world was about 5 years. And by the time it was done, I was absolutely sick to death of living in that world. I love that world. I love those characters. And I've lived mentally in it for a very long time. But Death Dresses Poorly took 6 months. And I wrote that because I needed a palate cleanser from living in this world. So I needed something that was far more relatable to me. The characters in Death Dresses Poorly, which is my very first novel, they are both me, or at least a hyper stylized version of me, like a 20-year-old me versus like a 55-year-old me. And what those
Mark,
two...
did you survive a tragic accident in your youth?
I did not. But I do like to say this. The first chapter of Death Dresses Poorly takes place in Chicago O'Hare Airport, and it's the meeting of Ethan and this enigmatic older gentleman dressed all in black. And to anybody who has read it or hopefully gets the chance to go and pick it up and read it, I will say this, that the very first chapter absolutely happened to me, almost verbatim. It was such a unique experience. And I was traveling to see my father, who lived in Florida at the time. And I met this man in O'Hare, and we had the same kind of conversation that we had in this. The only difference was in the book, Ethan — I'm not spoiling anything to say, this is right up at the front of the book — that Ethan's flying back from his mother's funeral. And my mother is still alive and a wonderful person and my hero, and I love her to death. But I was very much inspired by that. And I did go through a personal tragic accident when I was about 18. So I know what it's like to kind of lose everything and have to kind of start from scratch again, very much like Ethan, the main character, did.
I love the line about after surviving this tragic accident, your character Ethan begins to suspect that he may actually have something to live for. Is it a hidden purpose, his new beginning, or finding a decent cup of coffee?
A decent cup of coffee is almost spiritual when you finally get your hands on one. I mean, there's the one that you have in the morning that gets you going, but every once in a while you come across one that's just like, this is why I was put on this earth, to find this cup of coffee.
Or in the case of North Carolina residents, particularly those of the Burtis household, sweet tea.
Sweet tea always.
Keep the sweetness out of the tea. I cannot tell you. Being a Canadian, we only have sweet tea. That's all there is. There is no standard iced tea. Every time I go down to the United States, I order iced tea each time, if I'm not making it myself up here, because I love plain unsweetened iced tea. A little bit of lemon in it, it's fantastic. So whenever
I meet — and good for the teeth, of course, as well.
Absolutely. True. But whenever I meet an American that's like, oh, man, I like sweet tea, I'm like, well, first of all, come to Canada, because it's all we have. You order iced tea, that's all you're going to get. And second of all, I don't understand why. Why do you have to add the sugar? Just, no. I think it's just a perspective thing. I mean,
clearly, this could be the next location for Jessica Burtis and the Burtis family to actually head north across the border.
Now I know. My favorite food group is up in Canada, so I have to go at some point.
3,843 kilometers in European distance between Calgary and North Carolina. Apparently, if you're driving, it's 36 hours, 26 minutes. So basically 1.5 days. If you're flying, 4 hours, 33 minutes. We like to please, basically. So there we are.
What's
time? I mean, here we are doing something which, a year ago, I would have been in studio in Lincoln. Jessica might have been in the studio in Lincoln. We would have been phoning, and here we are, all connected together, living that dream, really. You know, it's strange, but it's true. I mean, Mark, it's a cliched question. During the whole pandemic period, has it improved your creativity? Has it made no difference? Is it something which you thought, actually, yeah, you know, the whole world's going to heck in a handbasket? Whatever.
I like to say that nothing really changed. I have always been an incredibly passive writer. I write in fits and spurts, and I am a very busy person. I am what I like to call an anti-author, in that I don't want to do this full time. I am very much a hobbyist author. Now, I take this hobby incredibly seriously. I want to make sure I show it its due respect. But I have two young sons and a wife. I have a full-time job that I very much enjoy, and I enjoy the people who are at it. I'm very happy, very comfortable in the life that I'm in right now. And with those two active kids, I am running around doing things. And when it was in the height of the pandemic and everybody's kind of stuck in their house, we didn't really change. I still have kids to entertain. My wife works from home. She always has worked from home. And I had all of the same responsibilities, but now the kids, I can't just be like, oh, go play with your friends, or go to the park, or go to the movies, or do, like, I can't do that anymore. So because I was that much busier, I was that much less creative during this time, and still kind of continue to be. I would say pen to paper, I've likely only done about 5,000 words. And I've also been taking a lot of this time to educate myself, because with the release of Between Conversations, I was doing this all myself. And this was my first self-published release. Up to this point, I've been traditionally published. And oddly enough, publishers aren't really jumping at the chance for a talented but humble Canadian author's —
they're worried about the book signing, Mark. They're worried about the book signing.
They absolutely are. But astonishingly, none of them are really picking up these kinds of books. And it was a passion project that I wanted to get out there. So I started to learn how to do that. And learning the ins and outs of Amazon and self-publication and cover design and all the rest of these things. Things that I had time to do that, and that was a little bit more reasonable use of my time during the course of this pandemic.
Again, it's interesting in terms of the technology. I suspect you have a virtual background there, Mark. I mean, it's looking very good. Initially, I thought you've got a huge, big version of Between Conversations.
Well, that's what I thought.
I am going to give you a little trade secret, and it's something that I'm incredibly proud of. At the moment, I am sitting in my son's room. His whole thing during this pandemic is that he really started to take to video game streaming and learning about things on the computer. So he got himself this wonderful setup. I'm surrounded by lights and the green screen behind me that I've been able to use. So because his mother and I helped pay for most of this, we are...
Invested.
Yeah, we are invested in it. Yeah. And I think I wanted to endorse his creativity, and he wants to learn about video editing and those kinds of things. And this is a great way to do that, but I'm going to steal it for things like this. So that way I can look far more professional than I actually am.
It's wondrous. You know, I just maintained the tartan rug, and that's fine. You know, I'm keeping it real, you know, go on the tartan rug and we'll go from there. It might change, but who knows? If we're on Microsoft Teams, it definitely would change. Zoom, I haven't quite sort of used the virtual background yet, but what the hey. Between Conversations also, to me, carried with it connotations of something which philosophers have also talked about over the years. In fact, Saussure said that ultimately it's the difference between the binary oppositions of text that actually creates the meaning. You actually polarize the male, the female, the good, the evil, and so on. It's the difference between those areas that really is where the meaning develops. Now, I'm not going to get heavily philosophical about the whole thing, but is that something which kind of almost subconsciously weaves its way into Ryujin and the kind of characteristics that we're actually there? Because it is literally not what's being said, but what's happening between what's being said.
I think so. It's interesting that you say that, because I, as a writer, I'm always trying to craft characters that are shades of gray. They don't fall in line. They don't follow those classic binaries that you're speaking of. Mm-hmm. However, when I was writing this, I was realizing that perhaps one-on-one individual stories, they aren't they're still following the way that I want it. But when you take all of these stories together, they are still stories that are man and woman, good versus evil. They are still following each of those classic ideas. Even if you were to take one individual story of the nine out of it, you might not see that. So yeah, absolutely. I think that it's a valid point. And it wasn't something that I did intentionally. And I think it's just something that we naturally, subconsciously always come back to, especially somebody who's as heavily influenced by those tropes and pop culture stories as much as I am. That's where a lot of these stories came from. So since that's the basis, that's where they all kind of originated from. Yeah.
And of course, the classic Vladimir Prop morphology of the folktale, in which he analyzed thousands of Russian folktales and said, there are only one or two basic plots, and here they are.
Exactly right. We're all just recycling the same story, and it's our ability to do that that creates an engaging story, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Or as we like to say, you've got adenosine, cytosine, guanine, and thymine, A, G, C, and T, four base pairs, and that's created all of us from DNA. It's marvelous, just wondrous stuff.
Exactly.
I always wanted to actually do a literary-based interview, Mark, where I can actually weave in some biology as well. It helps the first degree. It's very impressive.
Well, it expands the audience.
Jessica, thoughts from yourself? Any other questions you've got?
I would ask, what's your favorite part of the writing process? Because I think for a lot of people, when we look at the process of writing a book, it seems very intimidating and huge. There's a lot that goes into it. So what's your best, like, most favorite, enjoyable part?
Well, first of all, you're right. It is intimidating. And so that's a completely reasonable thing. When I first did Catching Hell, which was the first story that I wrote, but even though Death Dresses Poorly came out first, it's all about publication windows. I'm not going to get into it. But when I first sat down and wrote that, I'm like, books are supposed to be long. This is a long book, and it took me a year to write it. And then I was just like, oh, this book is too long. And it was that realization that I made something too long that took kind of the mysticism away from it. Just like, oh, I could have smashed something out pretty quickly. And then I did. So my favorite part of the process, I would honestly say at this moment, and things change, it's talking about it after the fact, explaining it to people. Because once I get through it, I always kind of feel a sense of relief when a story's over. So that's a big part of it as well. I am very much a pantser, not a plotter. So I can't say it's like crafting these characters and watching them all come together. No, I'm going along for the ride along with everybody else. And I had a 250,000 word book to prove it too. I was like, this journey took a little bit longer than I expected it to. But I love being able to talk about the process, because now that I've been to different writing conferences and I've spoken to other contemporaries in the writing field, I have found that everybody has a different process. But when we sit down and we sit over a drink and we have a conversation about it, we get really engaged in how the other was able to do that. And it really helps us be more comfortable with ourselves, because we realize that there's no one path. There's not one direct route to being a writer and getting a book out there in the world. And when they're like, well, how did you put together Between Conversations? Like, what was your idea behind that? And then we just kind of start talking about it. Now, part of that, I admit, is the fact that I am disgustingly narcissistic. So I would very much love to talk about myself all the time and the things that I do. But I also really enjoy engaging with my other writer friends and saying, well, I really enjoyed this. How did you come up with this? So because every bit of the writing process is different, and I've written 4 books now, and every single one of them has been its own unique little journey, realizing that other writers have that exact kind of process as well. And then we all get to kind of learn from each other. And it's like, well, this is really interesting. This is something that I'd never considered before. And maybe I kind of glean some of that and I take it for myself. And I also can kind of learn from their mistakes as well. And we're all kind of in it together. So yeah, as much as it sounds vain, talking about myself, having conversations like this, that's what it is.
And that's what this is all about.
Exactly.
I mean, it would be a gap of airspace on Siren Radio if we just literally had silence. You know, it would be a case we'd have to fill, you know, and do all sorts of, we'd have to play music, for goodness sakes. I mean, outrageous. Just, where do we go? You started writing at the age of 15, Mark.
I did.
I suppose most of us did. Was that with an eye to say, yep, I've got these things, I need to tell these stories? Or was it a case of in betwixt your martial arts, your baseball, your consuming of Mexican foods, you thought, I'll write about this as well?
It was a very strange, kind of unique time for me. In high school, I was what I like to call a ghost. I was not a popular person, but I wasn't necessarily an unpopular person.
I can't believe
that.
Was it the black hat? People saw the black cowboy hat and they said no.
I admit I've always had it. I have a personal philosophy that I can pull off any hat. If you wear it with enough confidence, like, and I've owned some strange hats. I have many interesting hats, but this is easily my favorite hat. There's a fun story behind it I won't get into. Yeah, exactly. Right? There's a fantastic...
Exactly.
Look how good that looks, right?
Including the Hoss Cartwright 10-gallon hat, of course.
Oh, which is easily the best one. But when I was 15, I was kind of going through a very strange time in my life. My parents had separated a few years earlier, and they were each kind of going off in their own way. My mother was raising me as a single mother. There was a lot of things that I was doing to escape, and one of those was consuming all of this kind of pop culture. I was very much into Japanese anime at the time. I thought that they were telling far more mature stories through the medium of animation than North America or the other Western cultures were putting out there. And I just started writing, and it was pen and paper, and it was terrible. I freely admit that it was badly laid out and horrible everything. Like, I'm not even going to say this horrible spelling. It's just punctuation and layout and there are no paragraphs, things like that. But it was an escape for me, and I just kind of plowed through it to the point where I ended up creating, you can't see it, but there's like a dent still to this day in my finger from the amount of writing that I did. And I still have, it was originally a trilogy that takes place in this same world, this Ryujin world. And I still have it. It's over in my bedroom right now, just kind of living in my bedside table. But it came from an honest place where I needed that kind of escape. And I always had a kind of a tendency to write and be a very creative writer. And when I was 15, that was the trigger. That was where I started writing and writing and writing, to the point where I almost failed grade 11, because I was in a science class, but it didn't matter. I was sitting at the back and I was writing in this book. And it was only through an interesting kind of series of good fortune and good people that I was able to even graduate that year and move on to grade 12. It was a formative time for me, and it was an exciting time for me because I realized that I can do this. But as I say, I go back every once in a while to kind of mine for story ideas and such, and it is terrible. It is textbook, never ever write this way. Here's a long list of things you shouldn't do.
You mentioned you had an indentation in your finger. Was that because you were writing with a pen and an actual ink pen as opposed to old school? This classic old school.
I was. I originally started with a drafting pen, something with almost like a marker, but incredibly, incredibly fine. And then that moved on to the same pen that I don't actually have one. Usually there's one around me somewhere, but a Uniball Onyx Black is my kind of go-to pen. Most things important in my life, I've always used that exact same pen. So I do have a pen preference, just like a classic old school writer does, for sure.
But not a quill pen, obviously.
Not a quill pen. Not a quill pen. The feathers are far too difficult to find.
worth looking for. Jess, over to yourself.
Yeah, I would say this is a very important question, but do you, maybe a little controversial, but do you pick favorite characters? I've heard it's like picking children that like are your favorite, so do you pick a favorite?
It really depends on what I'm writing. So when I was writing Death Dressed as Poorly, it's two versions of me. So we've already established I'm my favorite character, so having two versions of me was great, but it was a lot of fun watching these two versions of me and how I thought that they would kind of interplay. Like, you got to think about yourself. If when you're younger, your younger you meets your older you and you could come face to face, you guys would not get along. Like, there's a very likely possibility that you would be incredibly antagonistic towards each other. With writing the Catching Hell series, it was originally a story of three protagonists, and the story is that their home is destroyed and they are separated, and one group goes to the world of the technological and the other goes to the world of kind of the mystical and the magical. And it's their two journeys into this world. So you had two going off to the technological world and one going off to the magical. And I was going along, and by like edit number three, I had one character by the name of Paul, and Paul did nothing really. Like, I started to really realize that he was not necessary for this story. So I made the decision to completely cut him and just make it one goes one way, one goes the other. And it was easy. Difficult in the fact that I had to go back through the whole story and change the they's to he's and those kinds of things, and separate whatever minor story beats that character had and make sure that they were still represented in the story from another character. But I thought that after living with these characters and creating these characters and being with them for like 3 years, it was surprisingly easy just to be like, you, gone, you're out of here. You do nothing for me, Paul. So I would have said yes before that point. I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, these characters are my heart and I've poured everything I can into them. And then I just hacked one and just completely eliminated it from existence, except for conversations like this where I mentioned him, because it did nothing for me, right? And I think, like, for some stories, there is absolutely more of myself in a character than another. So I also, especially in between conversations, there's all these different characters. We're meeting all these different characters at different points in the story. And some of them are kind of like me and some are not. I do have absolutely like a favorite character through all of this. I do. Nothing's ever going to happen to her.
You've given the gender away now. That could have narrowed it down.
No. I'll say it right away. It's Crystal. There's a character in Catching Hell by the name of Crystal, and she makes an ever so brief appearance in the story Daisy Crown, which is the third story in this collection. And as a character, she's also from that original trilogy I wrote by hand, and she's just kind of this narrative thread that runs through everything, who was kind of born into this terrible world and was blessed and cursed with these terrible powers. And she's always been kind of my grounding character. Whenever I need the drive the story forward, or whenever I need to really get engaged again, Crystal comes out, and she's my rock upon which I have built this story.
There's going to be lots of things to actually sort of read and enjoy. And in fact, the digit finger, the finger of the index finger is poised, as I like to do in the studio, over a Mark Watson book scribbler on Facebook. And I think Jess is going to give me the okay for this as a midweek driver. Jessica, I'm proposing I should like this page now.
Oh, yes, definitely. Go ahead, please.
It has just been done. It has now been liked. I am not going to unlike it. It's all there. Mark Watson, book scribbler, has now been officially liked with, of course, the wonderful line, Be a Hero, from Catching Hell Part 1, a novel by Mark Watson. Lined up that overview. So, genius.
It is my personal motto. I have it on my stationery. I have it on my messenger bag. And at some point, I will have the tattoo. It's already laid out. I'm just a lazy man, and we're not really in a tattoo-based society at the moment.
That's well said. In fact, it's not Tina Turner, We Don't Need Another Hero. Be a hero.
Be a hero. Whatever that means to you, be a hero.
Well, you've been a hero today, even with the black hat, which I must admit caught me a bit on the hop, but it's there. You know what I mean?
Shades of grey, Alex. Shades of grey, as I said.
Very true. So we got two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Absolutely. It's been a ton of fun. I really enjoy this conversation.
Well, then, Jessica will ask you the next question, because this is the crucial deal breaker. Jessica, over to you. And who knows what could happen with the sweet tea issue? I mean, that's the whole line entirely. But over to you, Jess.
It hurts me to say, but we do have unsweetened tea in North Carolina. It's a little bit blasphemous for me to say, but it's here, so you can come visit. But will you be joining us again?
I would absolutely love to join you again, Jessica. That'd be wonderful.
Mark Watson, ace author from Calgary. And of course, a reminder, of course, the title of the book that is now out there, the collection of nine tales, is Between Conversations. You thought
that was
right,
hadn't
you? You thought, nope. I love that pause.
No, no. No, it's a pregnant pause. It allows you to build up the drama.
You know, that's exactly what I was doing earlier today when I was actually doing some voice work for a Chinese readership. So there we are. It's a small world, but there we are. We're all connected. Jessica Burtis and Mark Watson, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And I think all we need to say at this stage is be a hero. So after three, please. Three.
Be a hero.
I was on it.
What do you say? like dolphins can swim. But nothing, nothing will keep us together. We can beat them.